Thanks for joining us today. We are glad you're here. Today's episode comes at a time when some of you might be feeling a little blah. Our guest today is Darren Peppard, and he has a website called roadtoawesome.net. What better way to shake off that blah feeling than talking about traveling down the road to awesome? Topics include flipping the mindset to a positive vibe, spicing up the classroom with some decorations, ways to increase gratitude for both teachers and students, and ideas for teachers about how to keep all the things coming at you a little more organized. Dr. Darren Peppard is a leadership coach, consultant, and speaker focused on organizational culture and climate and coaching emerging leaders. Darren is the best-selling author of the book Road to Awesome and is the host of the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. As a recovering high school principal, Darren shares strategies and lessons learned from 26 years in public education to help leaders gain clarity, find joy in their work, and walk in their purpose. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path. Welcome, everybody. I hope you are ready to get positive, get out of those, well, we're in March now, those March doldrums, because we've got Darren Peppard on with us today, and he is here to motivate you and us too. And we're excited to have you on the show, Darren.
Well, thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So I'll start off with a question about advice for teachers. So we often get sucked into negativity around us and miss some of the positive things. And what advice do you have for teachers to, or admins, to start embracing the positive things that are happening around them?
I think, you know, Ryan, that's a great question. And what it really starts with is, what are you looking for? You know, so much of it goes right to our mindset. And, you know, we live in a time right now when, man, we are more divided than we've probably ever been, right, as a society. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you want to look for dysfunction, just look at D.C. You know, there is right. No problem solving. It's blame somebody else. And you know, that has become like this big toxic thing in American society and American culture, is it's all about finger pointing and blame and not being willing to accept and focus on ourselves. And so, but when we think about that blame piece, it comes back so much to us as individuals. And so what I talk to people around the country about is focus on what you can control and let go of the things that you can't. You know, there's just so much we can't control. And really the number one thing, guys, that we can control is our own mindset. You know, when my feet hit the ground in the morning, I have a choice. You know, I can choose to be that person who's going to show up and make a positive difference in the life of a kid, or I can be that person who's going to show up and be a tornado in the staff room. And you know what I mean by those tornadoes, right? You know, like this person, you know, and two people in the staff room, and all it is all of a sudden is, oh my God, can you believe how many people Eric put in my class? And oh my gosh, you should see this thing, you know. And, you know, we have our happy young, you know, early career teachers who come in and they just get sucked into this vortex. So
yes,
number one is, we have a choice. And when we make that choice to show up positive, it's not just simply, you know, hey, I'm going to do this today. Rather, it's in my mind, what am I looking for? If I'm looking for negative things, I'm going to find them. It is not hard to find, yeah. You know, but if I'm looking for the positives, I can find those too. And I'll give you a simple example. So I bought a Jeep in 2014. My Jeep actually just rolled 100,000 miles yesterday. I'm a big Jeep guy. I see another Jeep guy on the road, bang, I'm throwing the Jeep wave. I mean, that's just, if you don't get it, you're not a Jeeper. But here's the thing. Before I bought that Jeep, guys, I never saw Jeeps on the road. I mean, like ever. Now I see them everywhere. Why? Because I'm looking for them. So we have a choice. If we show up looking for positive things, we can find those things. And it doesn't happen overnight, but the more we start to really focus on looking for good things happening in our schools and then recognizing, rewarding, and reinforcing those things, that it energizes us. You know, you guys know how good it feels when, you know, when you see a kid do something well and, you know, you reinforce that, or you see one of your fellow staff members do something good and you reinforce that, it gives a little bit of an endorphin, a little bit of a, you know, energy boost to us. So by far and away, the number one thing that I tell people is focus on what you can control and really be looking for positives, because you can get pulled into that negative time, especially this time of year, right? I mean, you can get pulled into it really quick.
You know, and to add to that, and I was just talking to some teachers today about this very same thing, and you say, you know, you have to train yourself to see the positives, but I guess the way I look at it is that it's I don't know if you need to train yourself, because there's probably really 80 positive to 20 negative. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you watch the news, if you watch the news, you might think, oh my God, like the world's coming to an end because people are getting murdered all the time. But that's not the case. They're just reporting the stuff that gets our attention, and they're not reporting all the people that stopped and helped the lady cross the street, you know, but there's so much good in the world. It's just easier to see the negative.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's my take on it. But I struggle too, because I'll go out in the hallway during passing period and seeing kids freaking running around and putting their hands on each other. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? It does pop out there a little quicker. Well, let's talk about this. You've got a blog on your website. I don't know if we referenced your website. What's the address of your website? You want to share it with everybody?
Yeah, sure. It's roadtoawesome.net.
Well, that's easy. Roadtoawesome.net. So I was kind of going through your blog as we're getting ready to talk to you, and you have an article on there about the January blah. You know, you just kind of get into this, you know, the weather's cold, it's dreary, and you just kind of blah, you know. But in reality, that blah can really be any time. Matter of fact, we're like pre-spring break blah right now. What are some tips that you can give teachers to help shake off that blah?
I think there's a handful of things that you can do to shake off the blah. And a big part of it is really taking some steps to take care of yourself. You know, maybe that's, you know, going for a walk. I think in the blog you're talking about, one of the things that I had stated, because I was dealing with the January blah, to be honest with you, is I need to make sure that I'm getting myself outside. You know, maybe it's a 10-minute walk, or, you know, it's just something simple. Take the dogs for a walk. You know, I mean, I try to get my workouts in, you know, on a pretty consistent basis, but I'm inside, I'm on a treadmill, or, you know, in a weight room or whatever. This time of year in particular, and you're absolutely right, Eric, is yes, we can be in the blahs any time of the year, but in the winter time of year, we don't see the sun. I mean, we go to work, it's dark. We come home, it's dark. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the only time we get to go outside, it's 4 degrees and we're on playground duty or wherever, you know, and it just, man, it just really taxes you. So number one, I would say, is find a way to get outside and do something you enjoy. Number two would be to lean into those hobbies that you have, you know, the things that you enjoy doing, whether that's, you know, maybe it's just something simple. My wife loves to do puzzles, you know, lean into something like that. Or, you know, maybe you play some card games, or, you know, you like to go for a drive, or whatever it is. For me, I mentioned earlier, I'm a Jeeper. Man, one of the best things for us is just to get out, get off the road, get the tires dirty, and just be. You know, it's an opportunity to let your mind step away from work. And I think that's a big part of why the blahs come around. You know, you referenced, you know, we're pre-spring break blah, you know, and before we hit record, I think you were talking about like the October blah. And again, it's a before a break. What it all connects to is we get so stinking deep into the work. We get so down into the weeds that we forget to take care of ourselves. We forget to just take some good deep breaths. You know, maybe it's meditation. I meditate like 2 or 3 times a week, and it's just getting those good deep breaths, I think, makes a huge difference. So we just got to physically take care of ourselves and be willing to kind of pull ourselves up out of the weeds a little bit, so that we're not so consumed with the work that we forget about.
I think that's important. I try to, these days we've had warm weather, you know, recently here, and I've tried to just get outside, even to wear shorts to pretend that it's a little warmer than maybe it actually is. That's gone a long way for me, for sure. We have a theme at my school, kind of informally among my office team, that we said, less institutional, because they've started to work on sprucing up the office, because it just feels better when you think about like how outside is a nice transition from the indoor. Mm-hmm. Bleh. And then the indoor can be pretty bleh anyway, but it doesn't have to be. So you would
made a statement that you went a little mural crazy at one of your schools, but it sounds like it had a positive impact on your staff culture. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's interesting when the whole time that my daughter was in school, and I was my daughter's high school principal too, which was a really cool experience. But, you know, especially early in
it's a cool experience if she was behaved well.
Okay, so it was because she was really well behaved. Good kid, yeah. So she was a competitive dancer. And so we traveled all over the West constantly to all these different competitive dance events. And typically they end up getting held at, you know, a high school gym or, you know, an auditorium or something like that. And I mean, let's be straight, guys. You can only listen to Rock and Robin so many times before your ears start to bleed and you're like, oh my God, I got to go somewhere. You spend 10 hours in this gym or this auditorium to watch your kid dance an aggregate total of like 11 minutes. So I would just go and wander around. You know, I'm a bit of a school building junkie anyway. I love to see what other people have done. And what I discovered was, man, everybody's school tells a story, you know, and as a visitor, it's so powerful to learn what is it that this school cares about? What is it this school really values? Well, my high school, where I was the principal, I walked back in the front door one day and I'm like, man, if I was a visitor in this school, there's no story here. It's just nothing but institutional tan brick. So, you know, like, you know, Ryan, when you said less institutional, man, that just like really struck a chord because, I mean, the only story our hallway was telling was we love tan brick. We were built in 1970. That's what it told. And so I took my staff to the front door one day on a professional development day. And I'm like, let's walk the front hallway. When you get to the other end, I want you to tell me, what is the message that we are sending people when they come in the building, whether they're our staff, whether it's you guys, whether it's an outsider, but walk this, not like you do it every day, walk it like it's the first time you've ever come in here. We get to the far end of the hallway and it's a long front hallway too. And my teachers were like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you got to get halfway down the hallway before you get to our sports trophies. And apparently if we really like old sports trophies, and I'm not making this one up, I got to share this. One of our teachers actually found in the trophy case, the 1987 pie eating contest trophy for the county.
That is a great trophy.
Oh yeah, that we were clearly proud of that one. Holy cow. I mean, we were not telling a story. So we put a team together of adults and students. And the message was, look, let's tell our story, or at least a portion of our story, here on our walls. I met with our maintenance crew and said, hey, first thing when the paint crew gets here this summer, I want these walls painted. I'll give you the colors for each one. Everybody's got an idea for different murals and we are just going to get after it. And what we wanted was, number one, we wanted a wall where our students could see that we knew who they were and we valued them for who they were, not always when they were at school. So it's this big silhouette wall. And it's things like, you know, the silhouette of a guitar player, the silhouette of a skier, of a boxer, a skateboarder, you know, that's who our kids are. You know, we wanted them to know, hey, we see you, we value you, we trust you, we hear you. Please know that you're reflected here in our school. And then there were just so many other ideas that just kept coming. And before we knew it, that front hallway was filled and the work continued throughout the building over the course of a number of years. And, you know, I know at this point, some of those murals have been painted over, which is good. You know, I haven't been at that school in 6 years. What we painted at that time was our story then. They need to be continuing to tell their story now, you know, and I tell people all the time when I talk about this piece that, you know, we have this tendency to see something cool on Facebook or on Instagram or whatever, you know, a mural that somebody has done. And we're like, oh, man, I want to put that in my hallway. Why? That's somebody else's work. Mm-hmm. You know, that's telling somebody else's story. You know, if what you're putting on your walls doesn't tell your story, it's just paint, you know, but it should always be meaningful and tell that story about your school, about your kids, about your community. And it was kind of crazy. I did not ask for permission to do this work. And I think my superintendent was pretty upset. Mm-hmm. But before, and she was a graduate of the school, by the way, but before she had the opportunity to be upset about it, the newspaper had run this massive story. It was a front page story. The headline was like "The Walls That Talk." The community loved it. I mean, she didn't get a chance to say, you know, "Hey, I hate this." I mean, the look on her face told me that, but so be it. You know, I mean, the unbelievable just outpouring of support and just people saying, "Oh my gosh, this is incredible," was awesome. And I do want to say one thing, though. It didn't change our culture. It reflected our culture is what it really did. You know, because we had been really dedicated to changing the culture of our school from being really negative to being real positive. And that was just another way to reflect and to tell the story about the culture of our school.
Now, you mentioned earlier, let's worry about things that we can control. Right. So I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
And this is, I'm talking to my teacher listeners here, and I work in a really boring institutional school. Right. But I want to flare up my classroom because I have control over my classroom. I can't go buy some paint and paint the hallway outside my room because that probably even if the news did a story, or you being the principal might still be mad at the teacher for painting the wall without permission. So recognizing that we can only do what we control, do you have any advice for teachers that maybe want to add some flair, tell some stories, brighten up their room, kind of make their room that place you want to be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and I would tell you, as a classroom teacher, I was that way. You know, I was the guy that as soon as the wax on the floor was dry, and even a couple times the wax wasn't dry, and I was stepping into my room because I wanted to get the posters up and, you know, create different, you know, bulletin boards and that kind of stuff where I could make sure that my kids had an opportunity to have a space. I think number one, you know, display things that tell your story. We did another project at that school where we took all the nameplates off, those old plastic nameplates, you know, that, you know, the machine carves in the name or the room number or whatever. And we were doing, so we were repainting all of the trim, going away from the 70s brown to black, which was actually one of our school colors. And we just did door signs instead. And I just told the teachers, you know, hey, the door sign is yours, you know, put on there, you know, your name, you know, your degrees and where you got them, a little something about you and whatever else you want to share. Well, if you can't do that outside the door, do it inside. You know, let your kids know a little bit about who you are. It was amazing when we did that project because there were so many kids who would say things like, hey, did you know my English teacher went to college? Yeah, I did. You know, but like the kids didn't like realize that, you know, and even myself, I mean, I would go by, you know, and look at those door signs too. And, you know, I knew so-and-so had a master's, but maybe I didn't know they had two master's degrees or, you know, or those types of things. It was really interesting. But take the space and make it your own. You know, if that's, you know, just simple little displays of, you know, figurines, maybe you're really big into Star Wars, you know, you put a few things about Star Wars in your room, or, you know, maybe you're really big into, I don't know, Lego or whatever, you know, one of a brilliant, brilliant teacher that I was fortunate to hire when I was still a principal. And he's now a drama teacher in Green River, Wyoming, a guy named Bradley Skinner. Bradley collects Mountain Dew cans, and his kids bring him Mountain Dew in, I mean, the most bizarre flavors, but he's got them right there in his classroom. And it's just a simple way of just letting your kids know who you are and being a little bit human for them. And before you know it, you know, you find them, you know, kind of like in Bradley's case, bringing bizarre cans of Mountain Dew. But, you know, I guess the number one piece of advice then is, you know, share a little bit about who you are and find the ways to do that. You don't have to do it through paint. You know, you can do it by displaying stuff in your classroom, or, you know, by, you know, the posters you put on the wall, or how you choose to have students display their work in your classroom.
Love it. Excellent advice. Thank you, sir. We talked earlier about celebrations, and I'm with you. We've recently started at my school doing some celebrations. We're doing some preparation for the state assessment, and we're utilizing the state assessment software to take practice assessments, and then students that reach a certain threshold, we take them actually during our intervention class, not during our math class, even though the math teachers reteach all the content and review the test in their class. But the tests are taken during intervention class, which is during first period. So students that meet a certain threshold are allowed to go. We basically just have an open gym the next day, right? We celebrate their success. and have an open gym for them so they get out of intervention class and come. And I'm telling you right now, I can't even describe to you the amount of pride and interest in test taking that's going on in our school just because we give them an open gym. I mean, I walked in a classroom the other day and I could barely even get my foot in the door, and like it completely disrupted the class because everybody was telling me that they qualified for the party and this is what they got on the test. Or the ones that weren't telling me what they got, they were asked. I mean, I'm telling the entire class. So I settled them down a little bit. I was like, hey, settle down. I sent you an email. Your results are in there. You'll get a pass tomorrow if you made it. But I'm proud of all of you for trying real hard. What kind of advice do you have to maybe create some celebration opportunities within a classroom? Because what I'm talking about is a school-wide thing, right? But let's say we got teachers that aren't working at a school where there is a school-wide celebration opportunity going on, but they really want to kind of get that kind of passion and care and motivation out of their kids within their classroom. Do you have any advice for teachers to employ some celebration tactics in a class?
Well, absolutely. I'll take it right back to what you just said. The most powerful thing about what you just talked about, I mean, and the reason that the kids were super fired up about it was you were really crystal clear about your expectations. You know, if you achieve this, then this is what we're going to do, or this is what you will have the opportunity to do. You know, when we recognize, reward, and reinforce the behaviors, the academics, the attendance that we want to see, so many of our kids are going to rise to the level, you know, and in that particular case, you know, what you're doing is you're just really being clear. And in the classroom, it should be no different. Be extremely clear about what you expect, about what you want to see, about, you know, whether it's behaviors or academics, it really doesn't matter. But it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, you know, in terms of just that mindset around what are you looking for? You know, be really clear with your kids about here's what I'd like to see. You know, maybe it's, you know, on this particular unit that we're working on, you know, every student that can score 85% or higher or 90% or higher on the end of unit exam, here's what we're going to do. We'll do, you know, we'll do a nacho bar, or, you know what, if every student can score 70 or better, because now we're incentivizing, hey, I know there's two or three kids in here, I got to help lift up a little bit. I know I'm going to get to my number. I know I'll hit my number. How about I help these two guys over here? So that if we're all there, maybe it is an opportunity for us to, I mean, do whatever. I would recommend staying away from the, hey, we get to watch a movie thing. That kind of, you know, makes administrators' hairlines look like mine. But, you know, there's other ways we can incentivize things. But it, again, it just gets back to you got to be really clear about what you want. And then be intentional with how you're supporting kids. Don't just leave it to them and expect that they're going to get there on their own. That's where the true teaching really comes in, right? You know, if I'm saying, hey, I want everybody to achieve a certain thing, now I'm going to work my tail off to make sure I know what each one of my kids needs to help get them there, you know, and the reward that the kids are getting, it's my reward too as a teacher. And it's the payoff for the work that I've done when I see those kids achieve at a level that I want to see them achieve. So, I mean, you can plug in whatever kind of, you know, recognition it is. I mean, there's 100 ways to do that, but it's really, really important that the execution before that, you know, being crystal clear with the expectations, helping your kids know what it is, and then doing everything you can to help lift them there and getting everybody to buy into it.
Yeah. And I think another thing that really helps out my is the feedback is so fast. If I give the test in September and the party's going to be before Christmas break, well, I mean, we've kind of lost the luster. But if the party is the next day, or, you know, at least in the week, or nothing else, the feedback, I think that is so vitally important, is to, if you have a goal and you're going to do something, let's let the kids know if they made it quickly.
Absolutely. Well, I think, I mean, that's the truth of feedback no matter what, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you go and do an informal walkthrough in one of your teacher's classrooms and you don't tell them anything, give them any kind of feedback until the week later.
Yeah.
How are they supposed to do something with that?
They already forgot what they taught.
Exactly. I mean, you take an assignment from a student, or students, you know, turn in a test or something, and they don't see anything for 2 weeks. They don't care about that. And not only that, it's way too late to make any kind of, you know, corrections, you know, or redirect or, you know, new learning. So yeah, the exact same thing is true there. And I appreciate that you went there because yeah, having it be fairly immediate or timely feedback or, you know, timely recognition, mm-hmm. that's going to be a key as well.
Yeah. Awesome.
I think that I'm just thinking back to my days as a teacher, which were only 2 years ago, but that clarity is helpful because there's so many things to keep track of already for the teacher. And so if you know what your feedback is going to be like and how you can be clear, if it's coming, in this case, Eric's example, is actually kind of coming from an outside of the classroom source. He's doing the work. He's delivering the data. So if I'm in the teacher's position, I want to get that fast so that I can be, and know if he's very clear, it's like, okay, nope, only kids that are a 3 get to go to this party, or only kids that are above a 2.5, whatever that thing is. That really helps the teacher feel more clear because there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown at us as educators. And I think that can lead to a lot of burnout in a sense too, or overwhelm. And so my question is, how do you help? I'm transitioning maybe out of the feedback element, but how do you help teachers deal with all of that deluge of information, whether it's emails or this is the latest fundraisers happening at your school, or this is the latest thing that the admin wants you to do, whatever it is? How do you help teachers kind of compartmentalize or whatever it is? What do you recommend?
Right. You know, I think I would say 2 things there. You know, number one, it's good to communicate through email, but if we think for a moment everybody is reading our emails, we're fooling ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I heard it so often that, you know, as a leader, you know, if it can be sent in an email, don't talk about it in a staff meeting. I get that, but yeah, only if everybody reads their email, mm-hmm. you know, which we all know isn't very realistic. But so that takes me to really where I'm going with this first one, which is in your staff meetings, make them a combination, you know, make it a combination of, you know, that information, but also make it a celebration, you know, have a little bit of fun in a staff meeting. You know, if your staff meeting is only about, hey, let's come together and celebrate, there are going to be those who are going to resent that. They're going to think, now, wait a minute, you know, I've got papers to grade, or I've got this, or I've got this. So I think when we give time for people to come together to make sure that expectations or the things that they're getting can be clarified, can really be described in a way where everybody knows what's expected of them, and then throw in a little celebration, maybe a little bit of food or something like that, I think that's a great thing. The second thing, and I probably should have used this one first, it would have probably tied in better with the other one, which is, as a leader, you got to listen. I think the number one overlooked skill in leadership is the ability to listen. And I don't mean listening to respond. Early career leaders in particular, I know I was this way, struggle with this. You know, I'm going to listen to what you're going to say until I find the weakness in your argument, and then I'm coming at you. I'm going to interrupt, and nope, here it is. Yeah. Really, really great leaders are going to listen so they hear, so they understand, so they empathize. You know, they're going to do things like actually paraphrasing. You know, they're going to, you know, probe and ask good questions about what people say. So much of the stress and the overwhelm that teachers face comes from they just don't understand, because so much, you know, Ryan, you said it well, so much stuff goes at them that sometimes they just need to process, you know, and say, okay, here's what I heard. Is this really what you want me to do? Yeah. You know, that clarity in communication is so critical. You know, I remember a time, I'll tell you a really quick story. I remember a time as a basketball coach, we were coming out of a timeout, tie game, like 5 seconds left in the game. We had the ball. Had this great pick and roll play we've been running all year. I'm fired up in the huddle, and I'm drawing it up. I'm on my grease board, and oh, let's do this. And Lindsay, you're going to do this. And Rachel, you're going to do this. And we come out of the timeout, and Lindsay said, am I getting the screen or am I setting the screen? And I'm like, well, you're getting the screen, of course, you know. And ball came in bounce, and she promptly dribbled it off of her leg. And the other team ended up scoring at the horn, and we lost. And a whole way to the locker room, all I can think is, I drew that play completely backwards. Lindsey should have been setting the screen. I mean, we've run it this way all year, but in the huddle, I told them, hey, let's do it this way. But they went and did exactly what I asked them to do. The problem was I didn't know what I wanted them to do. So when we don't communicate clear expectations and then listen, I mean, Lindsey asked the question, coach, are you sure this is what you want? But I didn't listen to her. You know, I'm like, right. Hey, you know, here's what I called, go run it. Well, yeah, they ran it and it cost us a ball game. It was my fault. You know, so that's a simple example, but we've got to know that our adults have so much on their plates. Man, we got to stop and listen, really listen to them. And I think that just that alleviates so much stress when they at least get a chance to say, you know, Eric, is this really what you want to do? I mean, right. I just need to know, you know. Yeah. And typically they're going to do what you ask. They just need clarity.
Right. Well, I'll tell you this, let's segue into, we're kind of going on the seasons, you know, because I went on your blog and your blog is really seasonal. So you had a blog post on thankfulness, right? So here's the deal. Teaching can be a pretty thankless profession. I mean, you work your tail off and there's criticism from this end and that end, and your students maybe that don't always do well in class, they're getting negative scores and they're frustrated because they keep getting bad scores. What advice do you have to help teachers add a little gratitude to their lives? And I guess the teacher, and maybe you could speak from a leadership point in terms of how can leaders thank, you know, have a system in place to thank teachers, but more so how can teachers have a system in place to thank students? Because it's all contagious, right? When you start having a positive culture and you start talking about positive things and people start talking back to you positively. And but where do we get started? Because some people, and I'm not one of them, but when they wake up in the morning, they kind of have a sigh because maybe they're not loving where they're getting ready to get in their car and drive to.
Absolutely. You know, I'll give you one. I could probably give you 50, but my go-to as a school leader, and this honestly started when I was a second-year teacher, just the power of a positive note. I worked under a brilliant administrator the first 5 years of my career, and she decided she was going to leave all of us a positive note to start the school year, and she actually hid them in our classrooms. And what was really cool was she hid that the note for me in a wooden pencil box. My grandfather made it for me when I was a little kid. Hey, as a teacher, I'm going to put this thing on my desk. It's actually been on every desk I've ever had, including the one right here in my office. And inside that box is still to this day that handwritten note. Wow. Now, I've probably used 25 pieces of tape because the sticky's long gone. But because Betsy modeled that for me, I started doing it too. And, you know, I would leave as many positive notes as I could for students. I did it as a coach. I'd just write some positive affirmations for my athletes. As principal, I would do that too. You know, let's just do some positive notes for staff. Don't put them in their mailboxes either. Go put them in their workspace. You know, the more that I did that, I did it as a superintendent. I mean, like 1 year we did coffee tumblers for everybody in the district. I went in on a Sunday and I went and put a coffee tumbler in every single person's workstation. And I just wrote a simple handwritten note, you know, hey, Ryan, I appreciate what you do, man. Have a great week, Darren. You know, just simple things. But I noticed two things that would happen from that. Number one, they would lose the coffee tumbler, you know, or the shirt or whatever it was. But those notes, just like how my note is right here still 27 years later, those notes would be like with a magnet on their filing cabinet or under the glass top on their desk or whatever. And what would happen then is teachers would start to do that too. You know, hey, just like I did, you know, I mean, we're really good at following positive models if we're looking for it. And so I would encourage them, you know, hey, drop those positive notes to your students, drop some positive notes to your parents. You know, the more of those things that we do, the better. I was in a school recently. I'll throw this one. I said I was going to do one, but I'm going to give you a second one. Yeah. I was in a school not too long ago, and we were talking about a similar topic. And I think I had just talked about the notes. And the human resources director in this particular district said, you know, we decided this year we wanted our staff to know just how much we care about them. And we did a questionnaire, you know, like a lot of people do, you know, favorite fruit, favorite food, blah, blah, blah. But then they added this one question. Tell me someone who's really meaningful to you. It might be their mom and dad. It might be their spouse, whatever. They started doing positive calls to their employee's significant person and just saying, you know, we just want you to know how amazing so-and-so is here and how grateful we are to have them as a part of our organization. I know they sacrifice a lot of time and they're away from you a lot, but you need to know how much we appreciate that. And just making those positive affirmations and calling people. I mean, I heard him tell this one. I mean, I was like practically in tears. I'm like, my God, that's incredible. You know, and when we model those things, our teachers are going to start doing those things too, because they feel seen and heard and valued and trusted, and they're just simply going to pay that forward.
Yeah. And kids are the same way. You know, you give them little, you know, most schools is pretty traditional. Kids carry around a binder, right? And inside that binder, you can slip stuff in there. And I'll see kids, you know, they'll have like their honor roll certificates. And like for instance, every time I do one of these practice state assessment parties, they all get a pass. And they're like, here's the pass. I was like, no, you keep that. Just slide it in your binder and just keep all those passes as a recognition that this is how many parties I've gone to. And they love that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's powerful, you know, and it's and you know, the thing is too, we're talking about, you know, timely feedback, those types of things. When you get those things, I mean, they tend to land at a time when you need it the most, whether you realize it or not. They tend to land at a time you need it the most. So yeah. I would encourage teachers and administrators, just drop those positive notes. I made a commitment every year to do at least three for every single employee in my building. And sometimes I made it over three, sometimes it was right at three, but I always thought that was important to make sure that they knew that. I really wish I would have thought of the calling a significant other and just letting them know how much we appreciate the employee. That's,
yeah,
man, that one's gold. That is total gold.
I made a note for it. It's on my list. I'm going to implement it. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. I like the addition of the note too. I made at a point to thank staff. We have a Monday morning meeting for 20 minutes before school starts every week. And I made it a point to be thanking staff for something with really specific praise. But I like the personalized. Some people probably don't like the public affirmation. The other day too, though, I also opened it up to the staff. I actually couldn't think of anything that week. But I thought, you know, I never give the staff a voice to do this. And that was really fun, too. I just let the staff thank somebody that you really appreciated what they did over the last few weeks. And, oh, my gosh, it was one of those where, like, ooh, I want to share. And yeah. Everybody was so excited to share their thing that in many shared twice to just boost somebody else up. And that was pretty powerful. All right. This one's dealing with. Actually, I love this because we've had parent-teacher conferences this last week. Last night, and we will tomorrow night. And actually, I'm going to a board meeting as soon as this cuts out, in which there are probably parents that are less than happy. And sometimes, you know, that can weigh on a teacher as well, too. Whether it's the communication directly face-to-face, through email, a phone call, whatever that is, maybe just run into them in the community. But teachers have to deal with that. And sometimes that parent doesn't give us the nicest words. Last night I had a parent my staff said, I feel like essentially it was an unfair statement of your child to call me a bully because I didn't feel like, you know, XYZ. But the parent said, nope, I will stand by that 100% in my statement. And it was like, oof. Like, bully is a pretty mean word, I think, to throw on a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And so that stuff happens, you know. And so what advice would you give teachers to manage discussions, try to remain unrattled, maybe spin it in their head a little bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always interesting when you have those moments when, you know, a parent just comes at you you know, and I think it's a little bit different when it's an email versus, you know, when it's an in-person conversation, a phone call, that kind of thing. You know, an email, my thing with the email was always, okay, I've read it. I'm going to hit reply and I'm going to take their name out. You know, that way I can start to kind of formulate my thinking and I don't accidentally send it, you know, immediately get
great,
their name out of there.
That's a great
you
know, strategy.
You know, I mean, in honesty, you can say whatever you want. Once you've taken their name out, you can type whatever you want. You can kind of let the venting out a little bit, then you delete it. And then you actually write the one you want, but I would leave them reduced on my desktop for a while. I mean, it wasn't like I never reply to an email when you're angry. You know, I wish I could say I always did that, but you know, I learned don't reply to an email when you're angry, but boy, you can certainly start to formulate your thinking. You know, and then you can make sure you've crafted a really good response on the phone call. You know, when it's a phone call and they start to get belligerent, to me, that's easy. And I always empowered all of my staff with this. You know, the statement is very simple. If you would like to have a conversation with me, a professional conversation, I'm happy to do that. If you are going to call me names, if you are going to raise your voice at me, I am going to hang up the phone, period. That's just these are the ground rules for this conversation. And usually parents will back down. Sometimes they'll go a different direction and throw a couple more expletives in there and hang up on you anyway. Mm-hmm. Fine and dandy. You know, if I got the phone call from a parent who said, hey, your teacher said they were going to hang up on me, I would say good, because that's what they're taught to do. In person is tough because you can't just get up and leave. I had a grandma come in once when I was a superintendent, and before she'd even sat down, she called me all kinds of names. And I just said, you can leave. We can have a great conversation or you can leave. It's your choice. But teachers don't always get that luxury. Sometimes we just need to take a deep breath and we need to remember this. Parents are sending us their absolute most prized possession. Mm-hmm. And they are doing the best they know how.
Yes.
You know, the ability of parents in many cases goes back to how they were parented. Or they're doing the opposite of how they were parented. And we just have to remind ourselves, look, they're probably not angry at us. You know, they probably got cut off in traffic, or, you know, their kid called screaming at them and now they're going to call and scream at us. It's like the chain of screaming, you know, that thing. I actually have a blog post on that one too, called The Chain of Screaming. It's a great read. It's really funny, to be honest with you, because so much of that is based in reality. But we need to remember, yeah, that parents are sending their best to us. They're doing their best. But also, those people just simply want to be heard. And so, you know, not trying to match their volume, you know, we just need to remain calm, ask them for the facts, take notes. You know, a really good way to keep yourself calm is take notes and tell them, I'm going to take some notes so I don't miss anything that you share with me. You know, then number one, it's going to reduce some of that eye contact for you, which takes a little stress away from you. And number two, it allows you to really have your facts straight, you know, because what's going to happen for us, we're human beings. We're going to hear something that is not true. You know, well, my student said you did blah, blah, blah. No, that is absolutely not true. Nope. Take down all your notes. Because exactly. Don't get sucked in. You are absolutely right. And then you can say, okay, now I'd like to go ahead and talk about the things you shared with me. If they start to interrupt, hey, you had your opportunity, please let me have mine. And right. And there you go. And just do the best you can to keep it as a calm conversation. Don't be afraid to ask for somebody to be at the table with you. Maybe that's a fellow teacher, or maybe that's your administrator. And as an administrator, when I sat down at the table in those conversations, I would just say, look, I'm just here to help, you know, work our way through this conversation. We all want what's best for your child. We all want what's best for your child. Don't forget that. And that tends to help. Ultimately, you're going to run into, if you haven't already, you will run into that parent that you just finally have to escort out of the gym. And if it happens, it happens. And the thing to remember as an administrator, when you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I want to do that. Everybody's watching. Everybody's watching. And they are counting on you to say, we don't do that here. And sometimes you just have to be willing to tell parents, we don't do that here. Yeah. And as a leader, oh my goodness, your staff will appreciate that so very much, because adult bullies talk. It gets around. If Eric is the guy who shuts down that adult bully, hey, all of a sudden it's, hey, you can't act that way at school. And it gets there. But yeah, we're going to deal with angry parents. It's an unfortunate part of the job, just like having to go to a board meeting where there are going to be angry parents.
Listen, I'm glad you said that about they're doing the best they can. I just got through talking to my teachers today about this. And I just want to follow up with a couple points and then we'll close this out and end the episode. But just like in your class, you have a wide range of student ability. All of your kids have a wide range of parenting ability at home. And that's not a bad thing. It's like you said, they're just doing what they grew up with. It's just what they know. But here's the key point, is that they love their kids just as much as you love your kid. So we all want what's best for the kid. And you already alluded to that. So the question is how can we get there together? And my solution to them was that, listen, the more we keep the parents in the loop about what their kids are doing right, the easier the conversation is going to be when we have to talk about something that their kid is doing wrong, because that parent sees you as a ally. They see you as somebody that's looking out for the best interest of their child. And now that child is starting to get in the way of that. And just through my experience, and listen, we're going to follow up with this in a little bit more detail. I hope I don't get her name wrong, but we're going to be interviewing Crystal Frommert. She's written a book about how do you communicate to parents? So we're going to be talking to her and digging into that. And I'm really looking forward to that episode. Anyway, that's enough about parents. Listen, yeah. This episode, we've been all over the place. You know, we've talked about some positive stuff. We've talked about decorations. We've talked about being more thankful. We've talked about a system for organization. Let's just close this out, because we know that teacher burnout right now is probably more prevalent than it ever has been in education. And some of that is pandemic induced. Some of that is a change in philosophy of the way we discipline children, and teachers don't feel as supported. I mean, just take us out, Darren. Just what advice do you have to teachers just to keep fighting the fight and hang in there?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I would tell you this. I think burnout, number one, burnout is not age related. I mean, you know, I think I was burned out at 37, to be honest with you. I'm not burned out now. Burnout to me is when we start to lose sight or lose touch with our purpose. When we're starting to, you know, get pulled in a path that doesn't allow us to feel like we're fulfilling our life's purpose, that becomes a big challenge. Right now, man, it is so tough in education. I mean, there's more political pressure than we've ever faced. We've got, you know, school boards that have turned into the Jerry Springer show. We've got, you know, all kinds of outside pressure with parents and all kinds of special interest groups. And those things can really be taxing on an educator. And, you know, back to something we said at the top of the show, I mean, number one, focus on what you can control, you know, just kind of try to block out some of that noise and really stay focused on yourself. And, you know, when we burn out, I mean, the truth is this, you can't burn out if you were never on fire. So we got to get back to what it is that we were on fire about in the first place, that purpose. Now, I would warn leaders on this right here. Purpose and your why are two different things. And I really think educators right now are sick and tired of being told, hey, remember your why. We've overplayed that card. Mm-hmm. We've 100% overplayed that card. But when we talk about purpose, when we talk about what really drives us, you know, those are the things that, you know, we can use to help fan the flames of educators and of other educators. You know, you got to take care of yourself. You got to be willing to, I hate to say strike a balance, because it's such a misleading term. There is no work-life balance. There are, you've referred to seasons a lot of different times through the episode. There are seasons of work and life and work and life. We just have to do a really good job of trying to blend and steal time for family, for our life, if you will, in those heavier times, in those heavier seasons of work. So I just really think that staying connected with our purpose is really important, and celebrating those moments that remind us of our purpose. You know, that's, to me, that's really huge.
Yeah. Well, hey, Darren, this has been a loaded episode. We are so grateful that you came on to spend a little bit of time with us. If we've got any listeners that want to kind of follow you and figure out, you know, a little bit more about Mr. Peppard, how can they follow you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to the website, roadtoawesome.net, you can sign up for our newsletter. It's like the first thing that pops up. You can learn everything you need to know about Road to Awesome, about the work that we do. As you know, both an inspirational speaker, as a leadership coach, and then also the publishing company that we run. On social media, I am at Darren M. Peppard on virtually every platform. So it's really easy to get in touch with me there. And you can email me at Darren@roadtoawesome.net. So always happy to help out, always happy to reach out and to, you know, be that person to put a hand down to lift up other educators. Because like I said, it's a tough time and I just want to help people find some clarity. I want to help them find some joy in their job and just walk in their purpose. So yeah, reach out and communicate with us.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Darren. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on. This was awesome.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is at Eric J. Steven. You can also email us at thepegdoesntfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesntfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.